Welcome to Oral Fixation. This is Andy, and from one iconic male duo to another, we're dissecting, disseminating, and discombobulating behaviour by the Pet Shop Boys, released in 1990 on Parlophone Records. We're well into cycle four now, but some things never change. All music samples you hear in this episode are completely for the purposes of review and critique. Actually, very. Yes. We're also still recording Oral Fixation remotely from one another, but as my late nan would often say, you can do anything with technology these days. Enjoy.
Just making house with me and my nan. Yeah. So, big shout outs to deep boyfriend of the pod. I don't know if I've actually said his name on here before.
You have.
No, I think you
said
you did.
It a lot, yeah.
Peter. It's Peter. Yeah. It's Peter. anyway, so my setup is that I'm sat in our bedroom where all of the magic happens, the sac magic. Mm. I'm sat here on the floor in a sort of very ashtangy, shanty,
yes,
kind of cross-legged on the floor with my mic. I've got my mic, I've got my laptop, obviously, I've got my phone, not necessarily with notes, but with certainly the album up so I can refer to the songs on it. Mm. And then also, of course, I've got a whiskey and soda with a dash of lime.
That's what I'm trying to get to here, Hans. You're well watered.
Oh, I'm very much, yeah, fed and watered. Actually, well, not yet fed, but should say that tonight we're having seconds of definitely the most decadent lasagna I've ever made for myself, courtesy of your recipe. So thank you so much for that one, Andy.
So you need to help realize... me. You need to help me ideate. Whether it's, I don't know, a blog with video content or whether it's an Insta. See, what I love is I want to write about food, but I also know that I'm a platinum personality, and I know that I need to shine, in video. Shout out to Makosi.
Yes. Of course. I could be pregnant.
I need to figure out, what do I do? Do I write a blog, or do I like start an Insta, or like lol a YouTube channel? Sorry, what am I, 17?
No. Oh. I think start with a lol Insta, working title something like That Bitch in the Kitch.
I love That Bitch in the Kitch. I was also thinking of Oral Food Station.
That's great, because I was thinking we could, I mean, obviously, as with anything you do, the minute you mention some sort of creative endeavor that you're thinking of, I visualize 10 different ways in which I can jump on that bandwagon and just sort of ride those coattails. And so I was thinking, could we do it some sort of, you know, food-based spin-off of Oral Fixation, but I was going down the route of oral fixation,
yes,
going back to the source.
Yeah,
but I actually prefer oral food station. Just because it's so dumb.
It's very sort of Heidi in closet.
Very, very.
Now look, I'm genuinely really excited to talk about the artists that we're talking about tonight. Not in a sense.
You're down with PSB?
It's not about, you know, how I've been like, oh my God, I'm about to talk about one of my faves of all time. They're not one of my faves of all time. I know them quite well. But what I love about the Pet Shop Boys is that many things, as I'm sure we'll discover, but primarily so many threads of what they stand for, their music, their image, how long they've been around for, run through so many of, I'd probably say, like, the artists from like the best episodes of Oral Fixation.
Okay, interesting.
So Pet Shop Boys have, let's call them altercations with your Elton Johns, your George Michaels, your Madonnas, your Kylies, your Lady Gagas. To be honest, it doesn't get much better than that. So I see Pet Shop Boys as like a natural, you know, carrying on the torch of some of our most satisfying artists to cover and therefore listen to. I don't know.
Fun. Mm. I hadn't really thought about that, but there is certainly a sort of red thread of the Pet Shop Boys running through a lot of the people that we've covered. So yeah, that's very exciting. When I, straight off the bat, and I was thinking about this earlier, I am mindful that I don't want to get into the dynamic whereby you bring to the table an album and I sort of...
eviscerate it.
Shit all over it.
But so the album actually is the litter and you're the cat.
Spoiler alert, I actually really, really... This album really grew on me.
Okay, cool.
But to sort of... Because I wonder if a lot of listeners might feel the same way as me. I certainly understood, and I continue to understand, the importance of the Pet Shop Boys.
Yeah.
But up until taking a deep dive into the DMs, I don't know how much I really kind of liked them.
Yes.
There are a couple of songs that I love, but if you'll allow me to be Miss Frank, I think it was mainly the fact that Neil Tennant's voice, send me a bit West End so... girl.
I'm so jealous you coined that. And secondly, yeah, it's so interesting to just dive into that straight off the bat, because that has been a major struggle for me as a Pet Shop Boys fan. And I've discussed it with people before. It's incredibly idiosyncratic. The way he delivers vocals on song is so unique, and it's the definition of acquired taste, as far as I'm concerned.
It's like the kind of deliberately affected, like, nervously, or like, you know, I've waited years. Like, it just sends me a bit. And as I was listening to it, I thought, is this in fact a bit of internalized homophobia, and his voice, the kind of affectations that he's putting on that are quite sort of, I guess, not even effeminate, but they're kind of, idiosyncratic's a great word, but they're kind of deliberately a bit kind of, I'm going to use the word, like, because I can use this word, a bit faggy.
I knew you were going to say that.
Like, is that internalized homophobia, or do I just find it a bit annoying?
Don't know.
I don't know if I know the answer.
Don't know.
But...
Do we draw the line between it being something which is related to our internal... I don't know what that is. All I know is when I got into the Pet Shop Boys, it took me a long time to get over how irritating his voice sometimes can be. But I don't want to dwell on it too much because...
Because also, I think I've come through the fire.
Right, yeah, same. And I certainly have. Yeah, for sure.
So I'm kind of, it doesn't really affect me now because I've listened to the album so much and I know that it's coming. What I do now is I sort of listen out for like the amazing synths or the kind of almost kind of choral kind of churchy vibe, or the lyrics that are just so full of like longing. And that's the stuff that I kind of latch onto rather than just the way that he pronounces a word.
Yeah. And let's hope the same for Tones and Eyes fans, because
coming to Oral Fixation 2030.
Quick fix.
Quick fix. That's gonna be the quickest fix you've ever bloody heard.
Quick break. So I'm just gonna kick off with it's been a real pleasure going back through like older Pet Shop Boys songs, which I've loved, and just reminding myself of the kind of journey I've been on them with a fan, because it really has been a pleasure, actually. They've revealed themselves very slowly to me as an artist, as a group. Mm-hmm. And it starts with it's a very big bang. I've mentioned it on this podcast before, name drop, in episode 4. I went to the Brit Awards for the first and only time I've ever been, and I saw Girls Aloud win their first and only Brit Award for The Promise. I also saw that was the year that the Pet Shop Boys won Outstanding Contribution to British Music Award, and they performed a medley of their entire back catalogue, and their two guest singers were Brandon Flowers from The Killers and
Amazing.
Lady Gaga. And Lady Gaga was dressed as one of those like white and blue pottery, you know, those china pots.
Very Trinity the Tuck.
Very Trinity the Tuck, moon, Mrs. Potts rising.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And I was just so pumped to see Lady Gaga again, but like, oh my gosh, there she is. But that was my gateway, because I wanted to know what was the song that Gaga sung with them, which was What Have I Done to Deserve This, which was the song that they wrote for Dusty Springfield's 80s comeback. And she did the original vocals. And then around that time, don't judge me, listeners, I was only 18 years old and I was living with my parents, but shout out to mum and dad. There came a copy with the Daily Mail. I think it was the Mail on Sunday, the Maily Mail. Of a sample CD that Pet Shop Boys had done to promote their album at the time, which was called Yes. And bear with me on this. Yes was also the first album that they produced and co-wrote with Xenomania. So in 2009, they put out an album with Girls Aloud's producers, which led to Pet Shop Boys writing for Girls Aloud, The Loving Kind, which is my favourite Girls Aloud song. So
yeah, oh God. This, okay, I'm already getting shivers. This feels like it's going to be a kind of like, you know when like a TV show will flash back to another episode, but show it from like someone else's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see the scenes play out, but like from a different kind of angle. It feels like we're going back into the archives, but through the lens of the Pet Shop Boys, and I'm just loving it. Anyway, carry on.
Love that. So I remember actually taking this sample CD and putting it into like the computer, loading it in iTunes. And so I think it was like four songs from the new album, and then like their greatest hits. So of course I already knew West End Girls. Of course I knew Go West, because it sent me west, and also they love going west.
They love west.
And the Elvis cover, Always On My Mind. I really couldn't say at the time that I knew any more than those three tracks. I'm going to just pause here and ask you, what did you know or before this album of the Pet Shop Boys?
So, like, as in before, literally, like, a week and a half ago when we decided to do this album?
Yeah.
Well, okay, look, I knew the hits. Obviously, West End, the beginning of West End Girls... We'll play it in the background now. That, like, synth, that's fucking fire.
Yes.
Okay? Yes. That song, West End Girls, is a strut song. It's iconic.
Yeah.
That's my favourite Pet Shop Boys song. So I knew West End Girls, and I really, really liked it. And I knew Go West, and I knew it as this kind of, like, I guess quite lol kind of, almost a bit YMCA-y kind of gay anthem. With its tongue firmly in its cheek.
Yes.
And I obviously knew Always On My Mind. And then also, I guess the kind of the main other song that I knew was It's A Sin.
Yep. What can we guess that
and,
about?
Yeah, right. And I think on my sojourn around Europe, where I did my my she search into our queer forefathers, ancestors, and gender non-conforming ancestors.
You were on coach trip for gays.
I listened to one of their albums. Maybe it was the one that came just before Behavior.
Yep.
I'm not sure of its name. And there's a song on there called Rent, which is amazing. But other than that, I hadn't really... Oh, and I also know the one that goes... I'm going to try and sing it. Savina,
love you. Yeah, love that.
So I knew like bits and bobs, but and I'd spoken, I think, to you a little bit about how important they are. But other than that, that's all I knew. Plus, of course, the Loving Kind and the remix that they did of Lady Gaga's AA, parentheses.
Yes.
Nothing else I can say, close parentheses. So, like, a bit, but never had really done much in the way of rounding out my knowledge of them.
Yes.
That was a really, really long way of saying, do you know what, Marge? Not much.
But you went west, like I did. and speaking, actually, of, like, going west, like, I do believe that... I'll say again that my listening journey with Pet Shop Boys has been a pleasure now that I have this really strong, firm affection for them, but it was a journey. And first, I definitely had to go overcome kind of like, you know, whatever my surface level irritations were with Neil's voice. But then I really had to get my head around how fabulously camp and flamboyant and almost kitschy, but proudly kitschy that they can be. Like you said, with their tongue firmly in their cheek. But it was a point where I was trying to learn more about the Pet Shop Boys and Erasure. So we should actually do Erasure for another.
I'd love that. Because I'd absolutely love that.
Many people compare them to the Pet Shop Boys, and I can see why. They're both male duos. They're both a gay guy and a straight guy. And they both make surface level, very similar music. But they're actually not that similar after a certain point. So I'd love to talk about them separately. But anyway, as a listener, I was trying to get into both bands. And it was almost, we've touched on it before, that moment where, I think it was at the end of the Kylie episode where I said about how I'd
I was going to say
Kylie,
the exact same thing.
And you nailed it. You said, do you think your journey with coming to love Kylie and being prouder of her music and elements of, you know, how camp and silly it can be is tied to your journey of being more comfortable with yourself? And I'd say 100% the same stands for the Pet Shop Boys. Yeah. And there were definitely
because also something that I... Sorry to interrupt.
Go on.
Okay. Something that I also... Getting into this album specifically... the thing I really loved about it was that I really got themes from this album that I really couldn't think of another act that had given me in it so specifically in a song before. If I'm not mistaken, I think we've spoken about the fact that Being Boring is about the HIV AIDS epidemic and all of the amazing people that were lost because of that. But then... This Must Be the Place, I Waited Years to Go. That, I could be wrong, but that felt to me like it was about returning to your home.
Oh my gosh.
That you'd kind of escaped from because you are this young queer boy that wants to kind of, you know, find the bright lights of the city. Yeah. And then Nervously, towards the end of the album, spoke to me of a kind of love letter to a friend that he'd maybe made when he was really young and kind of saw this I guess effeminate young boy in class or in school or whatever and thought, oh, I'm a bit like you too, like about falling in love with that friend because of your sort of otherness. And those things, as I was listening, I mean I could be wrong about what those songs were about, but it felt like I was being fed messages that I'd never been fed before, even by like really kind of like out and proud, other out and proud queer artists. Yes. So that was something that kind of like struck another nerve with me and made me think, okay, I'm even deeper into this thing that I maybe appreciated that I was before.
And the way that you picked up on the themes and messages, maybe quite effortlessly in what they were singing about, I think is in huge part to the way that they write their lyrics almost like prose. You can see it in the song titles. They have like famously, again, I'm going to use this word probably a lot, but they are truly unique. Very idiosyncratic song titles. So just across their back catalogue, they've got things like, I wouldn't normally do this kind of thing. How can you expect to be taken seriously? What have I done to deserve this? I don't know what you want, but I can't give it anymore. Like, these are just, you don't call pop songs things like that. You don't.
It's actually almost a lot of country songs are kind of
named. That's so interesting.
In a similar way.
That's a really interesting point. It's almost like you're going to love this, Doll. There was a Lady Gaga quote that she came out with very early into her career, and you'll probably know it better than me.
Oh, because she stans.
She's
she
huge
stands.
Stan. Huge PSB stan, and they stan her. She's like, there's no such thing as highbrow art or lowbrow art, or something like that. The concept kind of blew my mind that, and it really set me on that journey towards, there's no such thing as shit culture or lowbrow. It is what it is. But if there was Pet Shop Boys to bridge this gap between so proudly, fabulously pop with amazing synths and bangers, but they write their lyrics like like stories and poems and they just almost kind of say it like it is. They don't really seem to care much about whether words rhyme. They just break convention, and I think that's another thing which makes them maybe harder to get into initially, but once you're in, it's a strength, it's not a weakness.
And that's kind of, I also, just speaking about their kind of, I guess, the dynamics of their verbiage, I also just love all of their album titles. Like
one word.
Yes. Very, actually. Like, it's all very kind of like declarative. And
yes. Yes. Yes.
Love it. Just love it. Yes. Yes. Behavior.
Yes. Sorry about that. I also love, while we're just on this, this is completely surface level, but I stan how it's not the case on Wikipedia, and it's certainly not the case on Spotify, but Pet Shop Boys record their song titles all in sentence case, so they don't use like proper case. So you know how, like, you'll write, you won't use proper nouns. So being boring, the first capital B in being is a capital B, but the second B is lowercase. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, that's sentence case.
I fucking stan sentence case. I would just write in like, I just have this irrational adoration for sentence case. And maybe that's my influence. I don't know. Maybe that's Pet Shop Boys' impact. Anyway, back to the music.
Mm. Yeah, now for some more music. Yeah. So, okay, let's get into this specific album, Behavior. It's 1990, okay? Mm. How long have the Pet Shop Boys been around for?
I believe
this
they started
like 5 years?
84, 85, 86. I'm not sure. So very, very cool. Do you know Neil Tennant's first job before he was a pop star?
Was he something to do with smash hits?
Fuck yeah, he was. He interviewed pop stars for smash hits.
Love that.
Now, talk about like, that is just like my wet dream. Like,
to clarify for non-UK listeners, Smash Hits was I think it's over now, right?
But yeah.
It was like a teen music magazine that featured like, yeah, interviews with pop stars, and there'd be like lyrics on the back that you'd pull out and stick on your wall, and it was just a dream.
So influential in, well, first of all, it was like one of the most widely read printed publications, weeklies in the whole of the UK. So if you can imagine that maybe in the 80s there was maybe like 2-3 max music weeklies. There was the NME, I think there was Melody Maker, Smash Hits was firmly pop, but they had really fucking intelligent, funny young journalists in like their late teens, early 20s, and they just ruled the roost. The irreverent style, the humorous style of how they would just kind of both revere pop stars but also just openly make fun of them was a style which then strongly affected like Pop Justice, and Pop Justice being a huge music blog in the 2000s, which was a direct descendant of Smash Hits. And I don't know where you'd find it now. I guess Pop Justice is still going, but that kind of lol Twitter music fan who's in the know, wink wink nudge nudge, but has a genuine adoration for the music is all kind of very Smash Hits. And Neil Tennant being one of the pop fans to dominate the pop fans. Now, this pop fan loved pop so much and then became a fucking massive pop star in the 80s.
And he was in his, like, 30s, right? Like, they weren't big until maybe he was 30 or 31.
I'm just saying, doll, aura fixation can take us places.
I feel like you're maybe... Are you, like... Our generation's Neil Tennant?
Because I was always being boring.
There's a certain idiosyncrasy to your voice, Joel. I'll give you that.
Yes. So, no, to answer to your question, I think they were like 86. I'm not sure. They definitely had two albums before this one. I think the first album had West End Girls. The second one, which you talked about earlier, had the song Rent that you love, but it also had one of my favourite Pet Shop Boys songs, Heart. And it also had this song with Dusty, What Have I Done to Deserve This?
Yeah.
So then Behavior. So I'm going to be really honest. I actually didn't know Behavior inside out. I don't really know any of their albums inside out. I'm still a very, like, songs fan. So this was a genuine pleasure to do a deep dive. And I think 1990...
everything you touched on already about the influence from HIV and AIDS and just being a gay man in your 30s in 1990 London runs through this entire album. There's also a song, did you pick up on a song called Only the Wind?
Yes.
And he goes something like, I hope I can handle what I have to do. My nerves are all jangled, but I'm pulling through. No angry drama, storm blows. It's almost like he's weathering a storm. And I could not help, but we're like right in the middle of a global pandemic. The only global pandemic in our lifetimes that we're, you know, aware of. The last major global pandemic really was HIV/AIDS.
Go on.
Well, go on. Well, what were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say, like, that's the last sort of global pandemic that affects predominantly white countries. Like, I think there are a lot of other pandemics that have happened since that. Maybe because they haven't directly affected us, we've kind of not really been as across them.
I actually know exactly what you're saying there, but I'm gonna say global in the sense that it affected the entire world. I think that the last 10-15 years were actually quite contained to one or two or three countries. So I kind of know what you're saying, but I do think that HIV was the last truly global. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. That's just my opinion. But
No. But go on, because you're making like a great point.
It was eerie hearing the words of someone trying to like arm themselves to like cope through a thing that's just going on all around them. And I don't know. Would I have picked up on that if we weren't going through something now? I don't know. It was really, really odd. But then add to that the layers of, that was a pandemic which certainly in Neil Tennant's world, in his world in London, would have predominantly affected gay men and his friends and his partners, which brings us right back to being boring. And I will never, ever forget, Being Boring was on that bloody Daily Mail sampler years ago. And I just didn't really pick up on it. I just thought it was a bit sad and boring, probably. And then a few years ago, I reckon about 4 or 5 years, I picked up on the third verse. So if you haven't already heard the song, the first verse is he talks about friends from, I don't know, the 1920s or something. And then there's the second one.
It kind of goes through time, doesn't it?
It's like a time traveling song. And then the third verse, he goes, all the people I was kissing, some are here and some are missing in the 1990s. And I think I was walking through Sydney or something and I just almost like stopped in my tracks. And it just like smacked me in the face that I'd never heard so in black and white in a pop song, someone talk so painfully about HIV. And it's on this album. I don't know.
It's the opener.
It's the opener. What do you think about that song specifically?
I think that, I agree with everything you've said and the fact that it was, so like kind of as I was saying earlier, I'm sure that there are many, I mean, in fact there are loads of songs about the HIV and AIDS epidemic, but that kind of like the journey through time that you go on and then it being kind of like, because this was, I actually don't know in terms of timings, I think by 1990 things had certainly started to sort of calm down a bit and things were maybe a bit more under control and people were aware of things and
I think a lot of people
safer.
Were still dying though, I think. They were like literally
And so it's kind of like it's in the white hot heat of it, this song is being made and created. It felt very arresting. But I hadn't made the same kind of connections that you have about the situation that we're in right now. And I wonder the art and the music that will be created from this, what that will be like. Yeah. But I think also certainly like for that song, we can listen to that song now and kind of view it through a contemporary lens and talk about how kind of arresting it is to listen to or how chilling it is. But that song was released 30 years ago.
29, please. Like, thank you. yeah, it was 30.
But, like,
yeah.
That's But that's like radical.
Yeah.
The prevalence of this gay voice speaking these messages and saying these things is like incredibly brave and like I wonder if the record company kind of were in on what was going on, if when it was at the time, if it was marketed as such, or if it was this kind of like almost kind of subliminal messaging. I don't know, but it's certainly kind of cool to think about, and the fact that the Pet Shop Boys and that sort of affected voice that we've been talking about certainly kind of paved the way for so many people to then come and
and
do the same thing. So
yeah, for sure.
I've no choice but to stan.
We have no choice but to stan, to stain, to stannery. Now here's something interesting. Neil Tennant didn't come out as gay until 1994, which was 4 years after this album was released.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So. Okay. Well, in that case, then it must have been some sort of subliminal messaging. Because what would if people have thought he was?
Well, we don't know. We don't know how subliminal, because you also have to be quite stupid to listen to Being Boring and not realize that it's about all your friends dying of AIDS. So you know, the Pet Shop Boys refer to this.
Well, we say that now because we know.
Yeah,
I'm dumb. I miss things. I wouldn't have picked up on it.
Yeah, potentially.
You would have.
Mimi, I'm first. You would have picked up on that reference.
I could not believe. Anyway, sorry. So he
Neil Tennant was gay. So the Pet Shop Boys refer to this specific era as their, and I stand this, this is the kind of thing that only a pop fan would come out with. They refer to it as their imperial phase. So they refer to it as the time in a pop star's career when they are pretty much untouchable. In that they can send an album to number one, no issue. People from wide demographics of society generally really adore them. Basically, if you're a female pop star, it's the point where not just the gays are obsessed with you. It's that kind of like, I don't know. So I'd say
sweet spot.
Madonna has maybe had a couple, I'm not sure, but if you had to pick one, it would be like Blonde Ambition, Express Yourself, Like a Prayer, that peak, that point where someone's really peaking and they're riding their wave, but still the most people love them. I reckon maybe, I don't know. It's not saying that someone's over. It's like the point where mainstream society welcomes
the pinnacle,
them. The pinnacle. So let's say, I don't know,
it's where
Gaga could be like, critics, I don't know, the Fame Monster, or
it would be the Fame Monster.
Yeah? Or Beyonce, yeah. I don't know, Like Britney's wouldn't be Blackout. Britney's would be like her second album or something.
Britney's would be Oops. Britney's would be Oops. Right.
So this was for the Pet Shop Boys. So everything we've just talked about.
This was their Oops.
They just opened an album with a song about AIDS, and they had and Neil Tennant hadn't even come out. So I wonder, when you mentioned about decisions that the record label were making, what they had to do to, on one hand, not be completely open because he hadn't come out, but also the album is quite heavy on the references. It doesn't try to hide things too much. I don't know.
Do you reckon there'll be like in 20 years time there'll be albums where we were like, obviously she was bloody, you know,
maybe
talking about that and we didn't realize.
But then maybe. How like, I don't know, I'm sure there's still issues, but we've never had more queer artists than ever. We've never, and that is just so fabulous to draw, to imagine what people like Neil Tennant have laid the groundwork for, and it was only like 30 years ago. Anyway, shall we
also
do some kind
I was just going to say one really quick thing. Also, I think that we've spoken about it in the past, but there is this thing of like, there being like layerings to songs, and like, on the surface of it, a song seems happy or kind of, you know, frivolous or whatever. But actually, if you look into the, like, crevices of it, it's sad or it's kind of meaningful in a different way. I mean, this one seems quite obvious, but maybe it wasn't that wasn't the case because people weren't looking for that stuff. If Neil Tennant hadn't come out, in 1990, if Neil Tennant is just a guy singing songs and hasn't come out, you're not going to be like specifically looking for him to be some sort of spokesperson for this epidemic that has affected predominantly gay men. So maybe you wouldn't be as attuned to that thing. Whereas if you are someone of the queer community who has experienced that, you kind of get the secret message and you're like, oh, okay, yes.
Yeah, actually,
you know.
I smell what you're stepping in, or I'm stepping what you're smelling, or whatever it is. However, I do think that that particular verse, that particular lyric is quite explicit in talking about like nightlife and parties. And then all of a sudden you look around and the people who you've spent the last 10, 15 years partying with just aren't there. That concept just gives me shivers. It just, it's phenomenal. Yeah.
You're right.
I actually had this.
Anyway,
like,
sorry.
Weird, not weird at all, but like it's certainly, it's a grand creative endeavor that I don't know if I'm anywhere near talented for to tackle, but I love the idea of almost having some kind of form of art, whether it's like a spoken podcast kind of thing, or a book of like short stories, or even like, I don't know, like a TV show, just thinking wild and silly and grand, but of like lives of people who died of AIDS as if they never died.
I love that. A sliding doors.
A sliding doors. Kind of vibe. Almost like this insane pandemic which just blazed through these communities. And obviously not just gay men, and it's very much a pandemic in certain parts of the world right now. But that particular
It's still technically a global pandemic.
Okay, that's interesting. But specifically the time of like post that whole disco era that we talked about with Diana Ross and Chic, where it was the dance floor and the ballrooms and the freedom, and then how it all just went completely quiet because of what it was, and that huge sexual freedom that gay people had enjoyed towards the second end of the 70s just went right the opposite way when everyone kind of associated HIV with gay people. And I always just imagined that when I think about, you know, the fights that we've had with homophobia in the 90s or the 2000s or still today, post-HIV, because we were making so much progress before, I wonder if we hadn't had that enormous blip, almost setback, and then that's what makes me think about these people and these short stories of, like, people who'd just lived. I can't help but fantasize about, like, what would the world be like for queer people if HIV just hadn't happened?
I love that idea of creating these different stories of what could have been. It's also really sad, but also like the world would just be so full of like even more full of like color and art and fabulousness. If you think about the fact, like I don't know the percentage of specific, because it predominantly affected men just because of the dynamics of sex. I don't know the percentage of gay men that were lost during the HIV AIDS crisis, but it was pretty like significant.
It was brutal,
I believe.
Yeah, people were dropping and like flies.
And like the world must have just been so like even without those amazing men that we lost, like queer culture is still so prevalent and kind of queer men contribute so much to culture for the better. Like, I wonder what the world would be like if they had all still been here, the ones that we lost. Yeah. Like, it would just be like incredible.
I think that when I'm on like a Wikipedia page of like an artist, and then you scroll down and they're like, they died of AIDS, and it's like, but what if they didn't? Like, what about the art that they'd still be making? And specifically for like me and you and our age bracket, the majority of men who died at that time of HIV would have been almost like father figures or like uncles to us. And the thing about when you talk about othered groups or minorities, or the, I guess the difference between a sexuality minority versus a cultural or ethnic minority, or maybe one of the many differences, is that gay or queer people don't get handed down queer culture from their parents or families.
Yeah, it's not inherited.
You have to go out
from a family, from a biological family.
Yeah, and I just wonder how many young gay people in the 90s and 2000s would have... Anyway, look, it is what it is. We're musing, it's lovely, but we're 43 minutes in, and is there anything you want to say about the bloody music? Because we're just waffling on about gay shit, which I'm loving, but like, what songs did you love on this album?
So, obviously... Being Boring was a great opener. I love This Must Be the Place I've Waited Years to Leave, because of it just resonated so much with me as someone who, how do I put this? I love where I come from.
Yes.
I come from a small town, or like a medium-sized town in Sussex, UK. I love it, and it's always going to have such a huge place in my heart. But as soon as I began to realize who I was and my place in the world, and, you know, age 13, 14, realizing that I was different than the majority, I knew that I had to get the fuck out of Dodge.
Yep.
And I tried to do that in so many in so many different ways, even from like from the age of 16 going to college in Brighton, which was nearby, which was bigger, which was the city, which had gay people in it, to then going to a university that was far away, which was a big city that I could kind of explore as well, to then moving to London. I just knew that that kind of small town life wasn't for me. But I'm very lucky in that whenever I return to it, it's there's so much nostalgia surrounding it, and I love to return knowing that I am not, I'm informed by being raised there, but I'm not sort of defined by having stayed there. But I know that that's that sort of thread of wanting to escape this small town life is shared by so many queer people. Mm. And hearing the story of someone returning to the place that they waited years to leave felt so poetic. Yes. And just really, really resonated with me. To Face the Truth, I found a really kind of like... The thing I think I've realized that I really like about Pet Shop Boys is that, and I kind of touched on it before, but I really love that their songs are so full of longing. Mm. And so often it's about being... they talk about being in love, and like unrequited love, or having to kind of face the reality that a relationship isn't working. Another song I've actually realized that isn't on this album that they have is one called Later Tonight. Do you know
no,
it?
No, I don't know that.
It's about being...
gay.
Obsessed. It's about being gay. It's told through, I don't know if it's whether it's through Neil Tennant's perspective or just the perspective of a young queer boy at school being in love with the head boy. Mm. And them kind of having this secret tryst and meeting later on in the night to kind of, I don't know, chat or kiss or whatever. But yes, so To Face the Truth, the third song on the album, again, is sort of full of this longing this one's more sort of, yeah, about having to address the fact that I guess a relationship's over, but still pining for that person or longing for them. And then my other favourite one was, I actually kind of liked, generally across the board, I liked everything, but my other favourite one was Nervously, because as I said before, it kind of spoke to me about a kind of maybe starting a bit of a flirty sexual relationship with someone, but then it becoming clear that it's just platonic, and then kind of just appreciating seeing flickers of yourself in someone else that you haven't necessarily seen before.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
What are your smash hits?
I also love those two songs that you've mentioned, This Must Be the Place Where She Is to Leave and To Face the Truth. I also love My October Symphony just has this like random like Russian Revolution militaristic.
Isn't it about
kind of
like
vibe?
The ending of the Soviet War or something?
Something like that. And it has like guitars from Johnny Marr from the Smiths, and I just that resonated with me. I also love The End of the World. And I found, like I said before, that like I don't know what I'd call my knowledge of the Pet Shop Boys, kind of like intermediate, but not having been that album stan, and then you saying to me, let's do Behavior, it was such a pleasure to go through an album of theirs start to finish and to find that it really is quite a very good album. There's not really much fluff.
Very.
So musically, even if you don't bother too much with the lyrics, it's quite a... Very late 80s, early 90s, obviously. I think I read a quote that they were just listening to loads of George Michael, which I think is stannery. So what would 1990 be? Would it have been Faith or Freedom or...
Faith was 1987. Correct, so Freedom was 1990 because it was called Freedom 90.
Okay, and I think the album that was from was called Listen Without Prejudice. So that kind of... I wonder, I don't know, I'm presuming that like within the biz... George Michael and Neil Tennant would have been.
Oh, they've been done.
Yeah, and I love that. I love that too. And but so, just purely sonically, lots of like the drum beats and the synths, I can kind of see that crossover, and it's very Oz of its time, but not jarringly. So I think it's still a pleasure to listen to, just orally. I'm fixated by it.
So I've just realized something as you just said about Johnny Marr. Johnny Marr was in the Smiths,
yes,
right?
Yes, correct.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a song that was gonna be on this album called Miserabilism.
Okay.
That literally the day they sent it to get mastered, they were like, okay, no, take it off.
Oh my God.
And it's a diss track about Morrissey.
Oh, well, I stan that because I... Yeah.
You de-stan Morrissey.
I unstand Morrissey a few years ago. What are your just top level vibes of Moz?
Like, thanks for coming along, but also just shut up,
yeah.
Morrissey.
Like, the Smiths fucking flawless, and then just shut the fuck up. Like, no one wants to hear from you.
But interesting that on the same album that they collaborated with a member of the Smiths, they also had a diss track that was about another member of the Smiths.
Oh, interesting. Well, they worked with Johnny Marr very closely, and I think they also had a super group with Johnny Marr and the guys from New Order called Electronic.
That's hot. Yes. No, what's the main song that Electronic
did?
Oh,
it's so good. I'm just typing it now if you can hear the keyboard. Electronic. Electronic. The song is
electronic
called
song.
Getting Away With It.
Oh, hum me a few bars there, Dolly.
Getting away with it. So it's Bernard Sumner and Johnny Marr from New Order and the Smiths. And then they had Neil Tennant on as vocals on Getting Away With It. Yeah.
Hot.
Shout out to Chris Lowe. So on Chris Lowe's Wikipedia page, it doesn't explicitly state his sexuality. But
So Chris Lowe is the
other Pet Shop
Petty
Boy.
Oh, but we don't know if he's hetty.
We don't know if he is or if he isn't. But let's just say that he is straight. And I've got to say, maybe like an iconic ally to have been from the very start part of this amazing, hugely gay music duo. Like, their music,
I love that.
Is so
he's
gay.
The Bernie to his Elton. What's like another kind of iconic straight gay?
He's the Zayn to his Harry.
Yes. He is the Shawn Mendes to his Camilla.
Exactly. No. He's the Camilla to his Shawn Mendes.
The Camilla. He's the Camilla.
Yes.
He is the bloody Andrew Ridgely to his George.
He is. That's so gorge. Gorgeous George. Lovely Andrew. Did you know, I don't know if we mentioned this, but George Michael gave Andrew Ridgely a songwriting credit on Careless Whisper.
No, yeah. We've discussed that. He also gave him a hand job.
Yes, we know. Oh my God. Oh, really? Gel.
No. When you say George Michael gave, my head just went straight to hand job. Anyway, any other business for PSB. AOB for PSB.
So not specifically for this album. I'm going to give a shout out to my top five PSB of all time. I don't want to send you West because I don't expect the same from you. But my top five are, I'm going to say in order. Number one is Being Boring. Being Boring is probably my favourite Petrified song. Considering it wasn't even until a few years ago that I didn't think it was boring. Second is Heart. So Heart, the story behind Heart is, my heart keeps missing a beat. They wrote that in 1988 for none other than the Queen of Pop. And they were... They wrote it for Madonna's...
What, Gaga? She was very, very young at that point.
Yes. they wrote it for the Like a Prayer album, but they were too scared to approach her with it. So they never actually gave it with her.
Oh, they would have been terrified.
But famously years later, I think it was kind of raised and Madonna was like fuming because she was like, Madonna outed herself as a huge Pet Shop Boys fan. So not only did Pet Shop Boys produce the song She's Madonna for Robbie Williams, and they've got Neil Tennant's vocals in the background, Madonna, but Madge said that Pet Shop Boys are a huge influence on the sound of Confessions on a Dance Floor.
Because didn't they do a remix of Sorry that she then performed on tour?
You know what? You get 10 points for that, Gryffindor.
Thank you. I'm Hufflepuff and we all bloody know it.
they did. So Neil Tennant returned the favour by acknowledging the reference and they remixed Sorry, which she then performed on tour. We have no choice but to stand. Onto Gaga, obviously, they did the Brit Awards performance with her. And yes, like you mentioned earlier, that incredible remix of AA. They clearly just all stan each other, Gaga and PSB.
It's all just one big bloody gay loving. Because the thing is, Madonna and Gaga have had their differences. Everything's cleared up now, if we're to believe that Vanity Fair party selfie. But one thing they have in common is a vehement, unapologetic love of the gay community. And they would have got all the messages that PSB were feeding them. That's for damn sure.
They would have got all of that, but there's something pleasurable, I think, about a male, effeminate pop star who maybe doesn't get to live out his complete fantasies, but can impress the music and image on a willing female pop star who's effectively a drag queen. So not only Madonna and Gaga, but also, hello,
Dusty.
We haven't even mentioned yet the entire album they did for none other than daughter of the original gay icon, Liza Minnelli. Her 80s comeback, this was actually a strong contender to do for All Fixation before we even did Pet Shop Boys. So in the 80s, Liza Minnelli's like, I need a fucking comeback. Who can do it for me? Two of the biggest pop stars in the world, Pet Shop Boys. They did an entire album for her, and that's what that amazing cover of the Stephen Sondheim Losing My Mind comes from. Like, absolutely amazing album. Also Dusty Springfield. And then also bloody 2008 or whatever, The Loving Kind. So they just impress, they get to play with female pop stars. Like, I don't know, I think there's something really fabulous about that.
It's amazing.
Kylie, not to mention even Kylie. So Kylie, they wrote a song for Kylie in the early 90s when she was trying to get out of her Stock Aitken Waterman zhuzh. I think sadly her producers really like took all of the PSB elements out of it and made it a bit heady. But shout out to Matt from Loose Ends who played it at the living room party that me and you went to. But then, I don't know, they've got a weird thing with Kylie. I think in the late 90s she featured on another song by them. And then for the X album, her record label invited PSB to write some songs for it, and then they never heard back. So ups and downs for Kylie, doll. Ups and downs.
We've gone from your top five PSB just to a Oral Fixation chat through the ages.
Well, this is what I kind of meant at the start, where I was like, they have so many connections to so many AF queer bloody music icons, and I think it was about time that we did them. So thank you for suggesting.
I think the reason I suggested was because I thought we needed to talk about more gay men on this podcast.
Yeah, it's something that's lacking.
But sorry, what? So your top five, did we get through all of them? Or PS, we got Being Boring.
We got to number two.
Yeah, so...
So number three is what have I done to deserve this? Number four is their original. Now this is deep stannery, but it is available on Spotify. Their original demo of Falling, which was written for Kylie, which was the one that she hetified. So the original PSB faggy version is number four.
No, wait, stop me from falling.
No, not that one. and number five is Home and Dry, which is one of their like early 2000s random singles, which was shout out to the Daily Mail sampler. Now, I think there's something quite subversive
can we just say,
about
like,
me
thank you
getting,
so much.
Honestly.
thank you to the Daily Mail for all you continue to do for queer culture. Like, you
there's
know,
a direct
there's
lineage
support that
between
you've shown.
The Daily Mail and Oral Fixation. So, thank you to the Daily Mail.
Piers, we are indebted to you. And everything that you've done for our community. Thank you so much for being fierce, iconic allies.
Yeah. The other album I remember the Daily Mail giving away as free was Prince. So, you know.
There you go.
Homophobic.
A man, a woman.
Homophobic in the pages, homosexual in the CD samplers.
But then also Prince a bit homophobic in the
stay tuned
in the practice. Stay tuned, coming soon. Coming bloody soon.
Anything else you wanted to cover?
I just wanted to say I miss you. Aww. And that even though we are apart, it's such a pleasure just to be able, because we've obviously done our quick fixes, but this is our first proper full album episode that we've done, and it's been a blast, but it's made me sort of, I've been looking over into the corner of the room and thinking, oh, if Andy was there, then I'd be able to smell him.
That's right now I don't smell that good, actually, but
Well, thank God for small mercies in that case then, Dolly.
Hashtag farm life. but no, I really, without getting too sentimental, I do really miss you too. And we are living in a fascinating time, and I'm really, I feel very lucky and extremely grateful that we get to continue this kind of thing, that I can call, we can call and FaceTime whenever we want. And I love the connections that we're reaffirming with our friends all over the world and people that we love, because, you know, we can only talk to them remotely. So that's just what we're doing. But it's also simultaneously making me really look forward to and treasure when I have it, that in-person time that we have with our nearest and dearest.
Hopefully soon. Okay, doll.
Well, thank you for a lovely episode.
Thank you. And thank you to PSB.
Thank you to PSB. Thank you to Neil Tennant for just singing the fucking way that you want. Helping us tackle our internalized homophobia / just general irritation with weird vocals in the process.
Also, I think the thing I think is really cool about Neil Tennant is that he is that music stan that then became that pop star. There are so many people that I think love a thing and then try to be that thing, and it's a case of sweetheart, you may love it, but you're not talented enough to actually do the doing of it.
Shout out to
and
Jan.
He well, actually, I think I was gonna say more like Alaska. Like, Alaska was that drag race.
Oh,
stand.
Alaska is the Neil Tennant.
Alaska's the Neil Tennant
of drag
race.
She is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely.
But there's something really inspiring about that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, PSB. Also, for further reading, check out Neil Tennant's Desert Island Discs, because it's really interesting and cool.
I haven't listened to it. I can't wait. Thank
Stop
you so
it.
Much. I've never listened to it.
Oh, it's delightful.
Okay, amazing. And
and Kirsty just gets it.
Kirsty does get it. She fucking gets it.
She gets it. She's an ally.
Yeah, Sue Lawley, on the other hand, is the Daily Mail personified.
She can get bent.
That's the one thing she doesn't want to do.
I hope that she's okay during these troubling times.
I'm not bothered. The other last thing about further reading is, right now, PSB are all the rage in print media because a random book that was written about them at the peak of their career, and I think 1989, 1990, It was only printed, you know, just one print run. All the Pet Shop Boys fans bought it, whatever. But it's just been reprinted for some anniversary or something. I'm not sure. It is doing the rounds as like this incredible magnifying glass into what it's like to be a pop star at the end of the 80s who effectively runs the world. And I've ordered myself a copy and I can't wait to read it. I'm sad that I couldn't read it before this episode, but it's not due to be delivered to my Australian address until September the 1st.
So, okay. Well then.
Yeah, well then.
Cool.
All right. Well, what's on for dinner tonight, doll? That lasagna.
It's more of that lasagna.
Yeah, so
more of that lasagna, my sweetheart. And we're going to have a games night tonight. We're going to play some games.
Okay, just you and Peter or anyone else?
Yeah, just manipulating each other.
That's nice.
No, some card games, maybe a bit of Ticket to Ride, you know.
Lovely. Okay. Well, yeah.
How about you? What's on for you?
We're making cheese tonight.
Oh, is that a euphemism?
No, I've got a bucket of unpasteurized milk from down the road in a dairy. I'm not even kidding. And we have this cheese making kit and we're going to make fucking halloumi. All right.
I can't tell you how many people have got in touch with me telling me how much they stan your farm life.
Stop it.
Yes, sir. You're the talk of the town.
Talk of the farm. Just do your best. All right. I've got to get to milk. I've got to get to cheese making.
You better get churning, doll.
Yeah, just call me the milkmaid.
Okay.
All right, well, have a fabulous evening and we'll speak.
Love you, doll.
Next time. Bye-bye. Bye. Bye-bye.